Welcome to Ouch Hello, the show which aims to share far too much about our lives as disabled people. I'm Rob.
And I'm Kate. On this edition, we'll be meeting a man whose aim is to get into the Rio Paralympics next year. He only started with his sport, cycling, 2 years ago, and the year before that, he was serving time in prison.
Now, eating disorders are something that rightly or wrongly we usually associate with women. We'll be meeting a man who says that living with cerebral palsy led him to developing anorexia.
And will disabled people be allowed to use driverless cars? As more automatic cars are announced and rumours that Apple has one in development, two guests will be helping us look beyond the technology and predict whether driving licences will be available to everyone.
Music too, and the quiz. Stay tuned.
Ouch! Disability Talk from the BBC with Rob Crossan and Kate Monaghan.
We've got four guests this month. Let's say hello to Ryan Branson first. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, how are you?
Now, you're the man who's had anorexia that we mentioned at the top of the show. Now, airbrush models are often blamed for giving young women low self-esteem and eating disorders. Is that different for men?
I would say so. I mean, men are subjected to, you know, look more muscular, where women, I would say they're more stereotyped to look, you know, really thin. So there still is that stigma within the media that men really don't care about their appearance, but that's just not true.
Well, we'll go into that a little bit later. And now, Craig Green, hello.
Hello.
Now, you're our Paralympian hopeful. We'll talk to you later about your achievements since being released from prison in 2012. Now, you've got Poland syndrome, haven't you, where that's where your chest muscles and right hand are underdeveloped. So, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but I imagine when you were in prison, your fellow inmates, I mean, did you get a hard time because you looked slightly different?
Not particularly, no. There might have been the odd stare, but nothing out of the ordinary.
When you say the odd stare, do you mean a hostile stare or just a curious stare?
Bit of both, really. It depends how you want to take the stare. There is two different stares. There's a curiosity and then there's a rude stare. I mean, I prefer to be asked than stared at.
Yeah. How did you interpret these stares then?
Depend how big they were.
cautiously.
Yeah, cautious. I mean, I just got on with things, really. And I suppose a bit later on we'll get into that.
Well, indeed, we will get into that later on. But first, we're going to talk about driverless cars. They've been on the horizon for a few years now. Google's famous Street View car has driven 700,000 miles without an accident, but more crucially, without a person controlling it. Companies like Tesla, Peugeot, Mercedes are now revealing partially automated cars, which allow you to let go of the wheel on motorways. And some vehicles are also able to park themselves.
In fact, a lot of people do let go of the wheel on motorways anyway. Not that I approve of this, but I have seen it.
Yeah. That is not possible.
Anyway, go on.
The technology is well on the way, and there are rumours that Apple and Virgin are about to throw their hat in the ring too. It's an exciting prospect for people who presently can't drive due to disability. But will lawmakers and the general public accept that it's safe for disabled people to travel alone in a computer-driven car if they can't take the wheel in an emergency?
Now, to help us discuss this, and I must say this is something which personally to me I'm incredibly excited about, we have AbilityNet's Robin Christofferson, and we have Hugh Hoddy, who works in policy for a disability charity. Hello to you both.
Hi.
Now, Robin, you currently can't drive. Now, where would you go if someone gave you the keys to a driverless car right now? Where would you go?
Yeah, so I'm blind and it would be a dream of mine after, you know, using public transport for several decades now, to be able to just go door to door anywhere. I don't care where. I might even just cruise around to begin with.
We're not talking driving to Paris. We're talking literally going to Aldi or a supermarket.
Who knows? Just to have the option.
And same question to you, Hugh. Where would you go right now if I were to give you the keys to the driverless car of your dreams?
I have no idea. I at this stage, I have to say, I think I'd walk.
You'd reject the keys.
Yeah.
I'm taking back the hypothetical keys and clutching them closer to my bosom.
Yeah, but I'd sell it. Why would
you walk when you have such a, you know, bizarre and amazing and potentially exciting, safe piece of technology?
I don't think it's exciting. It's a car.
Now, you're visually impaired, aren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Well, I was visually impaired by the time I got to the point of being at school. You know, my mates were getting provisional driving licences. I couldn't. And I felt that emotional pain of seeing my peers sort of almost a rite of passage, moving to being a proper guy. Driving is very strongly associated with masculinity and with independence. For men, it's a sense it's you have to be independent, whereas perhaps things could feel a bit different in those days. I mean, this was 20 years ago.
But also, I mean, I'm thinking, just because I went through this exact experience myself, I remember the pain and humiliation my friends who didn't pass first time or didn't pass second time went through, and I was so happy that I didn't have to get into that challenge. And secondly, the other thing was, because I'm not driving, it means I can just drink however much I like at the pub. Did you not find these sort of compensatory factors, you know, appealing to
no,
you?
No, I didn't. I wasn't into drinking much because I was a really keen cyclist, oddly, in those days with the remaining vision I had. I wanted to become a really great hill cyclist. It was pie in the sky. It was never going to happen, but it was fantastic exercise, and it meant that for those years that I had enough vision to be able to ride my own bike. Mm. I rode a bike instead of driving, and I rode in the Peak District. And so I was on my own. I was able to just cycle on my own. So I suppose that's an important thing that I have experienced, manoeuvring my own vehicle, you know, albeit a bicycle, along the road. So perhaps my need to drive was partially met by that.
Mm. Now, Robin, obviously we've heard now that Hugh really doesn't have an interest in a driverless car. I mean, what about you? I mean, do you really think that this is something which potentially could change people's lives? And if so, how?
Absolutely. I mean, all of the people with a variety of disabilities for whom driving is either difficult or impossible would benefit greatly. But, you know, this isn't a disability-specific project, so the insurance industry are incredibly excited by this, and there's already noises about them giving lower premiums to people that have autonomous capabilities within cars, and also autonomous vehicles in general, you know, fully autonomous vehicles, will attract lower insurance as well. And this is something that is addressing a huge problem. I mean, 90% of the time we're not using our car, so it's just sitting in the driveway or somewhere, you know, car park somewhere, taking up space. 30% of inner city traffic is just cars circling looking for a parking space. So there are very definite congestion and car sharing needs that are going to be met by this. But more than that, it's just something that would really, I mean, it might even revolutionise sort of car ownership. You would literally just call one. So Uber, for example, which is a private car taxi company in the States, in the UK and elsewhere in Europe, which just uses an app on a smartphone. The iPhone version of it is very accessible, so blind people utilise this a lot. To be able to call a car, admittedly driven by somebody at the moment, but that capability to be extended to autonomous vehicles would be incredibly powerful.
So it seems that a lot of the technology is definitely already there, but it's very hard for me to imagine in my lifetime that Britain's motorways are going to be full of blind and visually impaired people like me reclining in the back of their car with an iced tea whilst being ferried automatically to Dumfries. I don't know why I said Dumfries. I don't want to go to Dumfries. But do you really think it's going to happen?
Absolutely. So we've already seen concept cars by Mercedes, for example, where there's no steering wheel and all the seats swivel and there are screens all around the place and it's basically like a living room on wheels. And
give us a date. When are we going to see these on the road? You had to be Nostradamus here.
I'll tell you the smoking gun from an evidence point of view is the fact that Google Ventures, so that's the venture capitalist arm of Google, have invested $258 million in Uber that I mentioned before to autonomise their vehicles so that they don't have to pay drivers. Mm. And they're going to be funding a fleet of 25,000 taxis. Now, if you think about it, the whole raison d'etre of that is that you can call one. And if you can call one, it has to be able to drive autonomously. And you have to be able to get into it. And I'm pretty
positive. Yeah, but you still haven't said when.
Okay. I think that, well, we know that this technology is mature. The only, you know, it's legal in three states in America. There are road tests here in the UK. The only issue at the moment is with snow and rain, which is why the three states in America have very little of that, if none. And that's not going to be too much longer in the pipeline, according to, you know, the evidence in the tech press. I would At the very earliest, I would say 2 to 3 years. At the very latest, I would
two
say
2 to 3 years? You really think?
I got to step in. 2025, 2030. there's a reason for this. If you read the Department for Transport's pathway document to driverless vehicles, the